6025 East Burnside. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, and holla!
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Take it to the beach.
That's what we planned, but she stood me up. Roxanne, I wanna be your man.
Roxanne,
and here's our game plan.
Here's your game plan. Be sure to tune in on Thursday, March 9th, just before midnight, as we celebrate a trip back in time to Queens, New York, 1984, as Roxanne Shanté and UTFO go at it. We'll be dropping tracks from the Roxanne Wars and celebrate her brand new hip-hop biopic. That's Thursday, just before midnight, on KBOO Portland.
Well, my name is Roxanne. I don't say no, I just a cold rock, a party, and I do this show.
A mix master!
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Gospel of Loving Kindness at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center in Portland. The Gospel of Loving Kindness is a play by Marcus Gardley based on the true story of 15-year-old Hadiyah Pendleton, who was killed in Chicago after performing at the presidential inauguration in 2013. This play runs from March 10th through April 9th on Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. Again, that's The Gospel of Loving Kindness, March 10th through April 9th, on Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 North Interstate in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. On Monday, February 27th, a coalition of Multnomah County and Portland, Oregon officials and social service agencies announced that local law enforcement would begin a Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, or LEAD. LEAD was first developed in King County, Seattle, Washington, in 2011. LEAD is a pre-booking diversion program developed with the community to address low-level drug and prostitution crimes. The program allows law enforcement officers to redirect low-level offenders engaged in drug or prostitution activity to community-based services instead of jail and prosecution. By diverting eligible individuals to services, LEAD is committed to improving public safety and public order and reducing the criminal behavior of people who participate in the program. To learn more about LEAD and how it will be implemented in Portland, I spoke with Deborah Kafuri, chair of the Multnomah County Commission, and Abby Stamp, executive director of the local Public Safety Coordinating Council.
I am Deborah Cafori, Multnomah County Chair.
I am Abby Stamp, Executive Director of the Multnomah County Local Public Safety Coordinating Council.
And we're here to talk about a new program that that Multnomah County is going to be starting, a pilot program at least, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, the LEAD program. What has led you to champion this project and to make it happen here in Multnomah?
Well, the last 2 years, as I've been chair of the Multnomah County Commission, we've really been looking at ways to reduce what I believe is our over-reliance on jail. And we've been working to divert people who don't really belong in our jail system, who should be receiving treatment or should be receiving housing or should be receiving whatever services they need so that they don't reoffend and that they can get their lives back on track. And through Abby's leadership as executive director of the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council, affectionately known as LPSCC, we've been looking at how communities all around the country are addressing this issue and stumbled upon, actually we didn't stumble upon, it was fair, but this program that was being done in King County.
The Multnomah's had diversion. I mean, this county was one of the leaders in the U.S. In developing drug courts back to Mike Schrunk's days. How does this differ?
You don't have to go to jail, and you don't have to get prosecuted. So that's what's unique about LEAD, is that when there is contact with a law enforcement officer, the individual has the opportunity right then and there to change course. All of the other diversion programs is you go to jail, you get booked, they fingerprint you, then you get processed, then your case gets prosecuted, then you got to go to court. And once you're in court, there's the opportunity to do a diversion program or any number of requirements by the court and by the attorneys as well. And if you're successful, then your case gets dismissed, you don't get convicted, they lower the, they do something different. So this is not even an entrance into the front door.
Now, there are, as I said, two routes in. One is through an arrest, but which is, thus it's called a pre-booking, but there's also the social contact. Could you unpack that for the benefit of listeners?
Sure. So we took that concept that Seattle was able to employ, which is a social referral. And the reason that came to be in Seattle was as they were ramping up the program during the implementation process, they realized they couldn't just open the floodgates and let clients in because they needed a way to be able to titrate up and ramp up at a decent pace without getting flooded. And they thought this, if they could do an on day or an off day, then they would create a natural controlled group for their evaluation. So what they ended up doing were red days and green days. So green days, yes, you have contact with law enforcement, you can get into LEAD. Red days, no, LEAD doesn't exist, it's business as usual. And what that turned into is on red days, officers had individuals approaching them in the target neighborhood saying, hey, is it a red day or a green day? Because if it's a green day, I got my dope back at my camp, and can I go get my drugs and bring it to you so I can be eligible? And they thought that was pretty much ridiculous. You shouldn't have to come and commit a crime in order to be eligible for services. Right. So even from the get-go, we decided that's what we need to do. So there's an arrest process where, yes, you're apprehended with drugs on your person, right? Then you get the opportunity to participate in LEAD if the individual chooses, or a social referral of, oh, yeah, you know, I know John over on 2nd and Main, and he would be a really good fit for the program, and we'll just see if we can get him in. And anytime an individual can approach a law enforcement officer and say, yeah, I want in. Let's do it.
So now, on the social arrest, obviously, they'd have to be in possession. Would they have to be in possession in order to do the social referral?
That's not at all. No.
Okay. So just if there's a need.
Correct.
This kind of a program requires buy-in at all kinds of levels, obviously. Not just, I mean, with the community, businesses, also law enforcement. How is that process going?
It's going surprisingly well. I am somewhat new to this area, and in prior dealings with law enforcement, did not see much of a willingness to change the way things have been done. But I have to say that we have had buy-in at all levels, and it really does take buy-in at all levels, from the district attorney, the judges, from the Portland Police Bureau, the Sheriff's Office, everybody is bought in. And I think it's because we have worked really well together as a group on issues in the past. For example, the justice reinvestment that we were working on with the state of Oregon to keep people out of the state penitentiary has required an unprecedented level of cooperation between all these jurisdictions. And I think that trust and understanding has led us to say, wow, we can do that. Well, what else can we do?
Have you gotten any response from business community at all? I mean, the announcement was just made at the time of this recording. It was just yesterday. Not much time for a response, I suppose. But have you heard anything yet?
We have some members of the business community that are involved in the LIPSIC process. So, yes, the business community is involved. Actually, if I remember correctly, they were huge proponents for the LEAD program in Seattle because they saw just the level of street dealing, and it was the same people and over again, and they said, hey, you got to do something about it. Police and law enforcement, you guys need to do something. And that's why it has been focused on a particular area. That's why in Seattle it started in the Belltown area, because the businesses said, we're tired of seeing people standing out on our corners dealing drugs.
And then the area that's being targeted, that's is that Old Town? Where's the...
It's Old Town and then into the Lloyd District as well. So, yeah, they did a very thorough analysis of where the largest concentration of arrests had been made in the past. And so that's the area that they're going to focus on. Now, in Seattle, they have moved it to be a bigger size now, and we may do the same after this pilot. I know that the Gresham Police Chief has said she's very interested in participating. So hopefully this will go well, and we will be able to move it to a bigger area.
The main thing is you're hitting both sides of the river. So that's important. One of the big problems, of course, is resources. What are we going to do to make sure that there are adequate resources available? Treatment referrals, housing, and all that. That's a big effort.
It is a big effort, and I don't want to undervalue that, especially when we're looking at the tight budgets that we're facing, not just at the local level, but at the state level and potentially at the federal level. So finding resources for this has not been easy. However, it is a priority for us. And I think this is such a much more humane way to deal with people who have a disease, the disease of addiction. And hopefully the goal is that people will get into treatment and into housing, and then they won't be on the streets and they won't be going through our criminal justice system. So we do believe that ultimately there will be some savings from a reduction in the number of people who are serving in our jails.
Do you foresee any obstacles moving forward in rolling out the pilot program, and how are we going to get past them?
Well, like any new program, there will be obstacles. I'm not quite sure what they will be, but I'm sure they will present themselves. We have several different teams of individuals who are meeting to make sure the rollout is as smooth as possible, and when the obstacles are identified, to make sure to ameliorate and remedy them as quickly as possible. There's a policy team. I'm on the policy team, the chair's office, our district attorney, Rod Underhill, our sheriff, Mike Reese, and some of the usual suspects in the criminal justice leadership, in addition to members of the Portland Business Association, and the Citizens Crime Commission, Downtown Clean and Safe, and also folks from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. So we've really reached out to folks who live and breathe in the target neighborhood to make sure that we're working with them as this rolls out. There's also an operations team, the actual officers that are going to have contact with the individuals and make the connections to the case managers who will be hired through Central City Concern, the agency that is administering and supervising all of the case management and service brokering. And then there's a data team. So they're the folks who are going to look at all of the outcomes and process measures to make sure we are on task and on target. So obstacles, like anything that ramps up, we don't have 24/7 eligibility. It's based on when the street crimes unit has officers staffed and working downtown. But we're starting with what we've got, and then we'll figure out how to grow it. So I think some of the biggest obstacles will be in what we don't know yet.
Oh, I would also say that we put a lot of time into this. We first started talking about this at least a year, if not 2 years ago. So that there's been a lot of planning and preparation. And then I would also just give a shout out to Central City Concern. you know, we've chosen through an RFP a well-known, well-respected, and very successful organization to partner with us on it.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. My guests are Deborah Kafouri, Chair of the Multnomah County Commission, and Abby Stamp, Executive Director of the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council. We're discussing the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, or LEAD, which has just been implemented in the city of Portland in Multnomah County. According to the LEAD National Bureau, there are 7 cities in the United States which have fully operating LEAD programs, of which 5 have been certified by the LEAD National Bureau. Portland is one of those 5. I realize sometimes that I go past things that acronyms and the alphabet soup stuff, and sometimes just terms that I'm accustomed to. But harm reduction, for instance, well, I know what harm reduction is, but thinking about it, possibly some listeners are going to be a little confused, especially as it applies here. Could you explain a little more about harm reduction in the context of this sort of program?
Harm reduction is a term used to help do exactly what it says, to reduce harm. Back when I was a social worker for high-risk kids on probation about a decade ago, I used to want to help Johnny smoke less weed. Not stop smoking weed, but to smoke less weeds, not go to school high, right? So really looking at ways to help people to be more functional in life and just to meet them where they're at. And some folks are going to take a lot of effort and a lot of time and energy to be ready to make a significant change. And harm reduction is simply a way of looking at what that readiness for change is. And it's going to be all over the board for any individual.
You have been a leader in harm reduction. Syringe Exchange here is one of the oldest in the, it's not the very oldest, but it's one of the oldest in the country. Could you talk for a moment about that, just harm reduction generally, how you view that in the state?
Well, I think we realize that not everyone is going to be successful with getting off drugs or getting off alcohol the first time they try. It's just, you know, that's what the data says. And it's incumbent upon us to help those people, you know, not hurt themselves and not hurt other people. So that means potentially finding people housing so that they're not using drugs on the street, or finding, or, you know, helping people with a needle exchange so that they're not using a dirty needle, overdosing, and then dying. It's a different way of looking at things, and I think yet it's been around for a long time. And as you said, Multnomah County has been at the forefront of this, especially with needle exchange for years. It's also a way, with the needle exchange program, I can say that that's a way to engage people who might not otherwise get engaged. And just even having a contact with another human can be helpful in starting people on the process to getting back into society and becoming, realizing their self-worth and their self-value.
Certainly, McKean County's experience. I mean, they're even looking at the possibility they're moving beyond just looking at the possibility and actually trying to roll out supervised injection facilities. So, any alcoholic could tell you that slips happen. You know, there's no immediate miracles. If you're talking about people with real hardcore addiction and dependency issues, they're not going to just quit. What happens to people who don't just quit as soon as they start in the program? Are they thrown out? What happens?
Well, that is really where this program is different from some of the other programs. It is a harm reduction model. And another reason why Central City was chosen is because they have a very good track record of working with this population. In fact, the medical director at Central City talked yesterday about the difference between her patients with diabetes and the difference between those patients and patients with a drug addiction. And we don't expect someone who has diabetes to go get their medicine and bada-bing, they're cured. We know that there's going to be slip-ups. We know that there's going to be remission. We know that there's going to be times when everything's not going in the right direction. And that's a normal part of any disease. And so really respecting people, helping people when they make a mistake to get back on track as opposed to punishing them is the direction of this program.
There is no expectation of abstinence, period. the charge, the instant offense that someone is arrested for goes away. And then if there are subsequent times when that individual is apprehended with drugs on them, well, then the lead team discusses whether or not it would be appropriate or useful to prosecute that person on subsequent charges. We know this is a really hard population to help. We hope that harm reduction, client-centered, strength-based, trauma-informed case management will engage folks in a different way. We have no expectation of abstinence. We hope folks will get motivated and start to engage in treatment and move towards a life of recovery, but we know that's a long process.
I presume, but I should ask, will among the treatment options, will substitution treatment, methadone and such be included? Is that so?
Medication-assisted treatment, absolutely. What makes me excited about the buy-in that Chair Kefouri spoke to is people are buying into a new way of working with a very hard population that we as a system have failed so far. And being able to work with folks and meet them where they're at and provide the kind of treatment and support they require, whether it's cognitive behavioral therapy or NAAA or shelter or hygiene products or medication-assisted treatment. That's what the case managers are trained to do, is do an individualized case plan based on the person's needs and what they're ready to do.
Let's go to the social referral method of contact for a moment, because that's, I mean, arrest and diversion, like I say, we've had that for a while here. That's a thing we're rather familiar with. But probably the idea of a social referral, yeah, explain how that, Lynn, how that will work.
There are few differences between the social referral acceptance into lead and the arrest acceptance into lead. There's some little tweaks about the eligibility, but once someone's in, you're in. We didn't want to have to slice and dice between whether John has dope on him on Monday but not on Tuesday. And really, we're focused on the target population and the need rather than whether a person had dope in their pocket. But once you're in, you get a case manager, you get an intake done, there's a screening process. And the rest is really pretty much the same.
There is one big difference. They haven't been put in cuffs, read their rights, and actually given a charge.
True.
So
For the arrest process, there is an arrest made, and the officer will write a police report, but they will not be brought to jail. And the case manager, this is the part we're trying to tease out yet, but the case managers and the street crimes unit officers will work out where they meet to do the handoff. You know, I'm going to just keep using John. Do they meet up with John at Central Precinct, or does the officer take John over to Central City? But there's going to be a handoff done. But again, it's a handoff to services and not a handoff to the booking facility.
So even with the arrest, they're not going to be processed through the jail and back out.
That was one of the things that police captain for Seattle Police Department learned, was do not change any process for police officers. They're stressed out. We want them to get back out on the street and respond to more calls, but we don't have to change their practice for a special population. So just keep the practice the same for the cops, and then just don't take them to the booking door.
Which I suppose makes it easier to get the training in and get the they said the street crime unit, are they, mm-hmm. This is the first one to be trained and
yes.
Equipped for this?
So we worked with the lead National Support Bureau and brought in some training for them for the harm reduction training. Our project manager has done a wonderful job using those national resources to help infuse us locally to be ready for this. And the street crimes unit is totally on board, from officers on the street all the way up to the chief. They actually, when it was first introduced to them, I heard their reaction was, oh yeah, I know who would be a great fit for that program, and it's about time.
I come out of drug policy reform, and one of the truths that I've learned over time is that a lot of times people in law enforcement are more than happy to see some of these reforms come in, because they are rather tired of the stuff they've been doing that hasn't been working.
And I think that's a really important point. People are going to ask, you know, why are you doing something different? How do you know it's going to work? Well, one thing that we do know is what's happening right now isn't working. We hear stories all the time, and they're not anecdotal. I mean, there's data that show that people just are going into the jail, back out of the jail, into the jail, back out of the jail. And that doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the individual. It doesn't help our community, and it doesn't help our taxpayers.
I mean, because we've got diversion, we've had drug courts here for a time. Waleed be a is it a competitive kind of program? Is it a complementary program? How would you put that?
I would say it's on the continuum of programs we have available. Part of our challenging discussions really included, if we stop John on 2nd and Main, and he's already in a specialty court, is he a good fit for LEAD? We don't want to give people mixed messages. If he's involved in a specialty court or a drug court that is saying you need to be abstinent, then bringing him into a harm reduction program is going to be pretty challenging. So we've got, you'll see on the policy document, some eligibility criteria and some exclusion criteria. And ultimately, some situations are going to be brought down to the individual. And what's going, it is the LEAD model and additional services and a harm reduction focused case manager going to help someone be successful in probation or the right? So the other areas that they are working in. But one of the things we're trying to do better as a jurisdiction is better assess and evaluate an individual when they enter the criminal justice system at the front door. What kind of responsivity should we employ for an individual? And some people are going to do great with drug court. They respond beautifully to the black robe effect, and other people aren't. So we're starting to figure out how to assess more people in a more comprehensive way to make sure that the fit and the responsivity and the dose is appropriate for their success.
Right on. And you said you've worked with the folks at LEAD National Bureau. Will they be coming in to do evaluations, give refreshers and such? Or
So we do have a relationship with the LEAD National Support Bureau. Chris and I are up from Seattle, has been down a couple of times. We've been up a couple of times, and we'll continue to work with them. There's an informal agreement we have with them to continue to use their technical assistance as needed.
How often will we be getting reports? You mentioned there will be data people looking at these. When are we going to see some the first numbers, do you think?
That's a great question. I heard through the project manager there were no LEAD referrals yesterday, so that was day one. You ask a good question. I know that the policy team would like to see numbers on a weekly basis. That team meets every Thursday at 2 o'clock just to make sure that we're staying on target. So what we'll need to do is work with our data analysts to work on a dissemination plan to make sure that both the process measures, which is how many people, who's getting referred, who's in, who's out, how come, and then also the outcomes, who's committing new crimes, what about violations, and who's in treatment and who's reaching recovery. Those types of measures are more longer term, but in the interim, we'll be tracking all of our widgets and gadgets.
Any closing thoughts for the listeners, and what should people be looking for? Do you have any public? Is there a part of your website where people can find out more? Or
yes, the Lipsick webpage through the Multnomah County homepage, which is www.multco.us/LPSCC, Lipsick, Local Public Safety Coordinating Council. Besides all kinds of good stuff there, there is a page on LEAD, and we'll make all of our policy documents and links to the Seattle LEAD evaluation available. And I did have something that I think is important to say. And the chair and I were recently part of the What Works in Public Safety conference down in Salem. We partnered with the State Criminal Justice Commission during their Justice Reinvestment Summit. And our agenda really focused on looking at drug addiction as a disease and looking at it through a medical model and truly asking the question, is the criminal justice system the right system to respond to a medical problem? Or should we look at a public health response instead? And I think LEAD is a tangible good that's putting us in that direction.
That was a discussion of the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, or LEAD, which is now being implemented in Multnomah County in the city of Portland. My guests were Deborah Cafori, Chair of the Multnomah County Commission, and Abby Stamp, Executive Director of the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council. Well, that's it for this week. You have been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and previous installments of the show on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give it a like. I want to thank our guests, Deborah Kafuri, chair of the Multnomah County Commission, and Abby Stamp, executive director of the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council. A quick thank you to our engineers, and of course, thank you, dear listener, for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.
Don't you know I have faults like anyone? Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.
Diggy, take it to the beach. Diggy, take it to the beach. Diggy, take it to the beach. That's what we planned, but she stood me up. Roxanne, 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 I wanna be your man. Roxanne, Roxanne, and here's our game plan.
Here's your game plan. Be sure to tune in on Thursday, March 9th, just before midnight, as we celebrate a trip back in time to Queens, New York, 1984, as Roxanne Shanté and UTFO go at it. We'll be dropping tracks from the Roxanne Wars and celebrate her brand new hip-hop biopic. That's Thursday, just before midnight, on KBOO Portland.
Well, my name is Roxanne. I don't say no. I just a cold rock, a party, and I do the show.
A mix master!
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights, on Sunday, March 19th at the Concordia University Library in Portland. Oregon Action Plan is a series of events to inform and empower our community. This first event will focus on immigration in Oregon.